kind of dig that that rock and roll lead-in music there. I forgot to turn the guy's cue on, so they couldn't hear it, but I'm sure they've heard it several times before. Anyway, hey, welcome to the Mead House. We've got quite a show here tonight. Chris is not with us. Chris is on vacation, or I don't know what he's doing, but he's off tonight. So we can talk bad things about him, and I know he never listened to the show. So, we do have a pretty good show here tonight. A couple of things we want to do. There's a couple of bottles of some stuff that I had sent out that we haven't touched yet. So we're going to get into that a little bit. Chris finally got his score sheet. Remember, he'd been whining and crying the blues about nobody paying attention to his Meads at the Major Cup. Well, he finally did get his score sheet. We're going to talk about that here tonight as well. And then, we've all got some project lined up. I've got a whole stack of stuff here ready to go that, will elicit some ideas, and I think maybe we can each help each other out, with some ideas about projects that we kind of got sitting on the back burner that maybe we can spend a little bit of time talking about. And then just a reminder for all of our listeners, this will be the last show for a couple of weeks. We'll be on hiatus. Back on April 25th. Don't forget, we're going to be taking our usual, this is kind of a bonus show. I believe this is show number 7 out of our set this time around. So, consider this kind of a bonus. And then we'll be off for a couple of weeks. But, you can always find us on Facebook. I know that's been picking up speed. I get quite a few notices, people checking in. And then, of course, the website, themeadhouse.com. That's where we hang out. Ryan Richardson in the house tonight. Aaron Martin along for the ride. Jeff Schaus. And my name is J.D. Webb. And, Jeff, did we find anything interesting on Facebook?
You know, it's been a busy week, but I did have one shout-out I wanted to make. I saw an experiment that was kind of after my own heart on the Mead Makers group. Guy by the name of Johan Olsen had a yeast experiment. It looks like he did something that I've been wanting to try for quite a while. He used essentially like the same honey, the same nutrient regimen, and tried a few different yeasts here. I'm just going to go down this list. He had the Y yeast 1388 Belgian strong, the Y yeast dry mead 1118 D47. 1116, he had the Mangrove Jacks M05, White Lab WLP 720, and a Kitzinger Rheinhette Portwine that I've never heard of, but it looks like it's a port kind of a style mead, yeast. And then he did some lager style yeast as well, and thought that was really interesting that he's included a couple different temperature ranges and a bunch of different yeasts. And he said overall the winner was the Belgian strong that was fermenting at lager temperatures, 11 degrees centigrade, which works out to, if my math is right, 52 Fahrenheit. And then the next best was the Y yeast Belgian strong fermented at 60. Y yeast was really taking that one. I wanted to give that guy a shout out because that is an experiment I've been wanting to try for quite a while, and I'm really interested to see his results. I want to see more experiments like this on Facebook, so I wanted to give him some props there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and I stopped by there and I saw that. Very interesting deal he's got going there. And be kind of fun to get him on the air too and talk about that. A lot of interesting stuff out there in those mead groups. And but thanks for that. Did you run across anything else, or is that it?
It's been a busy week, so I didn't really catch much of anything else.
Hey, no problem. I know how that goes, too. But, what are we drinking? Well, I know what the other guys are drinking tonight, but I'm actually drinking something a little bit different, obviously. I'll start this one off. I have been consumed, I love a good cider, and Chris had turned me on to a brand that he really likes, and that's that Magners cider. And, I mean, it's the real deal, too. And so I was able to find some here a while back, and this stuff is outstanding. So that was my, that's kind of my benchmark for trying to come up with a cider that's similar to that without the use of cider apples. And so I think I'm pretty much on to something. And I'm drinking one of my ciders. This is one that I made a while back. It's just apple juice, basically. And I used a Danstar Windsor yeast, a British ale yeast, which I think really lends to that imported cider taste. It's not the only sweet that you get is apple sweet. I mean, it tastes like you're biting into an apple. So there's no real sugary sweetness at all. And I'm drinking that tonight. So I love the stuff. I got a little bit of work to do on it yet. I guess you could call it a sizer because there is 1 pound of honey in it. So, but I hesitate to even call it a sizer, you know. And that 1 pound was, it was just enough to bring the starting gravity up to about 1.060. Where I wanted to start. So, and it went out dry and it's, oh, good. I had a couple of, I sent the boys, the crew, a box of 4 bottles of each. Now, 2 of them got a vanilla mead. The other 2 got the blueberry pie thing that Ryan likes to call it. And then, we talked about the, what was it? The bourbon barrel 1, and the vanilla mead, I think last time. And then tonight, they also got a bottle of this orange braggot that I had done here, and, figured we would do that. And then, I know Aaron's got the other blueberry pie, and Ryan has already tasted it. So those two will compare their notes on that. Chris kind of gave his review of the blueberry last week, as you recall. So let's go ahead and start it off, guys. The orange braggot. Whoever wants to go first.
I'll start. So this is the second time I got to taste this braggot. The first time I tasted it was about a month ago, and it was I tasted it at refrigeration temperature. So it was cold and I got, a lot of Tootsie Pop. Tootsie Pop is what orange Tootsie Pop is what it tasted like to me. And that's really what kind of dominated that cold tasting. When I tasted it again, a second time last week, I tasted it at just under room temperature. It was somewhere between 62 and 65 degrees. And I was sampling it out of a nosing glass. So something, that you'd often use for to really get the taste of a good whiskey.
Like a Glencairn glass?
Yeah. I mean, just a short, kind of bulbous glass that narrows at the top to concentrate the aroma. Mm-hmm. I find that those are good ones when I really want to taste something, a good one to use. It poured pale gold is kind of my note here. Pale gold in color. It had very good carbonation. It was very clear. And it had a lingering white head. So it was very appealing to look at. The nose, I got candied orange. Candied orange or maybe some other candied fruit that was coming out of it as well. When I tasted it, I got mild bitterness. Not enough for me. I'm not a hop expert, a hop, guy. So wasn't enough for me to pick out a specific variety of hop. I'm sure someone who is, you know, much more in tune with the different varieties of hops probably could. But mild bitterness. I still got the Tootsie Roll. I got the Tootsie Roll flavor. I got some caramel and a little bit of candy is kind of how I describe the taste. Overall, I thought that it was very balanced. You know, that bitterness balanced out kind of that candy flavor to it. I said it was overall balanced. It was pleasant. I enjoyed it. You know, Andrea also gave it a sample. She thought that it was very nice. And was picking up the orange. I didn't tell her what it was. I just told her to try it. She said she was picking up the orange, and then she also called out Tootsie Roll as well when she sampled it. But, you know, this one is interesting. There wasn't that much. Some of the different cocktail or beverages we've tried have very different flavor profiles depending on the temperature. Now, these were tasted, you know, 20 degrees, 25 degrees apart from each other, and we're still, you know, there wasn't a big differential, a big variable of what I got out of them. But again, I'll just end it off by saying that, you know, overall it was very balanced, very pleasant, and well done.
Thanks, Ryan. Who else? See, I think everybody got the orange, right?
Yeah. So I'm actually sampling it right now. So I don't know, Jeff, if you're ready, maybe go to Jeff first while I'm still taking some notes here.
Sure.
I'm going to be stealing your notes too. And no, just kidding.
All right. Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
So as far as color goes, I got a kind of a gold color with a little bit of a tinge of orange to it. The color was really, it had a whitish head, that was fairly well lingering. It lasted pretty nicely. And the carbonation was, I thought, just like spot on for this style or this, color. It was an appealing look. It had a little bit of a haze to it, that might have been just a chill haze. It didn't look cloudy like a Hefeweizen or a wheat beer or something like that. But it wasn't exactly incandescent either. As far as the aroma and the bouquet, I thought it was really light. I didn't get a lot of malt to it. I did get some, a kind of a sweet orange kind of a nose to it. And, didn't really have a lot of hops to say, for it either. Just a very light kind of an orange, aroma, that was vaguely sweet. As far as flavor goes, There was some malty sweetness on the tongue, and I thought that was light. It had almost kind of a biscuity character to it, that was pleasant. And then about mid palate, that orange really comes through and finishes strong on a bitter orange aftertaste. The bitter orange kick to this really reminds me, if you guys have ever had it, of Campari, that kind of a lingering bitter aftertaste. I didn't get a lot of hops in the bitterness. It was, The orange really overpowered the hops, as far as bitterness goes. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because as far as the overall impression goes, it has a little bit of a character of kind of like a shandy or a rattler, with some fruit juice mixed into a beer. And the bitterness coming from an orange peel as opposed to hops is kind of a little bit different, unique. It's a nice change of pace, I thought. I'm not sure with that kind of lingering aftertaste that I could have more than about two of these at a sitting, but I still thought it was a really enjoyable thing.
Okay. Yeah, this is, I'm just looking at the recipe here. Make sure I get the right one. This is cluster hops is what's in this. 1 ounce of cluster hops. And I got the same thing, Jeff. Not a lot of hops.
Right.
And
this is a cream ale, though, and I don't think those tend to be very hoppy in the first place.
Well, the thing that I was afraid of, as much as I like, I mean, I don't like a real hoppy, like these real serious IPAs. I just that's a little too much for me, but I do like the hoppy, some hoppiness. But what I was afraid of was because of the orange peel, you know, there's still, you know, even without the white part of the orange, there is still a level of bitterness in the peel itself, in the zest itself. So I didn't, you know, I was kind of worried about having too much of that bitter come through off the orange. Obviously, I think that's what it probably overtook whatever, you know, the hop, that cluster hop might have contributed. I don't know. Like Ryan, I'm not a hop guy. I was a little concerned about that.
If I were going to repeat this recipe, I might switch out your cluster hops for something with a little bit more of a like the grapefruit lemony character, like we've been talking about with some of Aaron's hop meads, and maybe just back down on the orange peel. Use 3/4 of what you used before. I think that would kind of balance the two out a little bit more if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. And this is a, I know it's not on the bottle, there's no label on the bottle, but this is a 7%, 7% Bragg, so, ABV. So, thanks, Jeff. Aaron, what do you think, bud?
So, a few sips in here and definitely enjoying it. Starting off just at the top of the list from the appearance, I would agree. It definitely pours kind of an orange, maybe burnt orange type of a color, and a little bit of a haze to it. I would say it's pretty clear for a beer. Sometimes you'll find beers that are opaque, and you can definitely see some light streaming through this. Agree as well, getting that nice white head here that is still lingering around after pouring it, you know, a few minutes ago for sure. Moving on to the bouquet, the aroma here, you know, it's funny, as soon as Ryan started talking about the Tootsie Pop and I said I was going to steal some of their comments, and that is proving to be true, you know, that definitely stuck out to me as well, kind of getting that Tootsie Pop type of aroma. To me, I am getting some other candy type of aromas here as well, kind of like an orange lollipop. What this is actually reminding me of, this might sound kind of goofy, but when I was a kid, my dad worked at a bank, and you'd go in and they would have these like dum-dum lollipops there that they would give the kids. And there's like a, I don't know if it was like an orange flavor or what, but I'm definitely getting that both in the aroma and the flavor here as well. Kind of that orange dum-dum, orange lollipop type of a smell. Definitely a little on the sweeter, fruity side in terms of the aroma. Moving on to the flavor, I would say, you know, this is definitely crisp and to me a little bit, you know, lighter bodied. I'm getting a lot of citrus character here, a little bit of grapefruit, a little bit of lemon, a little bit of orange as well. You know, almost like if you soaked some slices of citrus and like aged it on some of that. It's very pronounced to me, the citrus character. Also getting some interesting like yeasty, estery type flavor as well. You know, Jeff used the word biscuity and malty. Those are also two words that come to mind as well. One other thing that I'll pick up on as well here in terms of the honey expression, I may have mentioned this on some previous episodes, but sometimes to me, when drinking a mead or fermented honey, it can sometimes present itself with almost a salty type of a flavor. And I'm getting a little bit of that here as well, that kind of like a little bit of a saltiness. And, you know, it's not, I don't mean that as a bad thing. It's just for me, sometimes that's the way I perceive fermented honey. But, you know, all in all, it's very balanced. And, you know, from an overall impression standpoint, it's interesting, you know, 7%, I don't necessarily think of this as being, you know, tasting is something that's very high in alcohol. It, to me, this is something that's very sessionable, very drinkable, you know, on a hot summer day type of a thing. This is something that, that to me would be a very nice thirst quencher. And overall, just solid remarks on this, JD. This is a delicious Braggot, and I'm definitely enjoying it.
Thanks, Aaron. The recipe. This is 6 pounds of Pilsen LME liquid malt extract and 3 pounds of orange blossom honey. 1 pound of lactose right at the end of the boil. The cluster heated to 60-minute boil. And the zest, it's 1 ounce of orange zest. Now, the zest I put in at the last 5 minutes of the boil came off of 3 Caracara oranges. Don't know if you're familiar with those, but they're a lot sweeter orange than your typical, say, navel orange that everybody's familiar with. So I don't know if you can get Caracaras up there where you guys are all scattered all over the place, but that was put into the boil, and for a reason. I wanted those sweet ones in for a reason. Now, the zest that I racked onto came off of 1, I'd say average size, not quite an ounce of zest off of a typical size navel orange, and that sat for. Let's see. It sat for about 10 days on the oranges there after fermentation. 17 days in the fermenter before it was racked into a carboy on top of that navel orange. So, but that's the recipe right there. Just Pilsen LME, orange blossom honey, a pound of lactose, the cluster hops, and the orange zest. That's it. And the SA05 yeast. And it was fermented at right at 68 degrees for 17 days. And so I appreciate everybody's comments on it for sure. I guess Aaron had the other blueberry. We already heard from Chris, Chris loved it apparently. So he thought it was top drawer. So I'm curious to see what Aaron thinks about it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to transition here. I'm double fisting it here. I've got a couple sips left of the blueberry. This is a blueberry Sicer, correct?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So it pours a very dark purple. In my notes here, I wrote down it's almost a light brown to me. And, you know, this is kind of a weird description, but if you've ever poured yourself like a can of Coke or something and put some ice cubes in it and let those ice cubes melt a little bit where it kind of dilutes that Coca-Cola a little bit, that's almost the color that I'm getting here from this. It's very, very clear and actually poured with a very slight amount of carbonation. I think the word that comes to mind there is petulant, that where the bubbles dissipate pretty quickly, but they definitely were there a little bit. You know, the legs, this definitely clings to the glass. I'm just kind of swirling it around here in my glass right now and just seeing the, you know, that liquid just cling there to the sides of the glass. In terms of the bouquet, the aroma, definitely getting a very strong, pronounced apple and blueberry aroma here. The descriptor word that I wrote down here is juicy. It's almost like opening a bottle of juice and having those strong fruit smells. Absolutely no alcohol burn in the nose. you know, it's just very, very fruity in the fragrance. Honey expression is mild, but I would say that it kind of takes a backseat to the fruit character. Now, I don't know if it was the comment that I wrote down about the appearance, but that theme of like the Coca-Cola to me kind of like carried through a little bit, even in the aroma and a little bit in the flavor as well, where I was getting a little bit of that. You know, when I took the first sip of this, it wasn't really what I was expecting based on the smell. That very first sip that I took, it just kind of smacked me in the face with this puckering tartness, kind of a bite that was enhanced a little bit by the, you know, the carbonation that was there. You know, the tartness I would describe, it was kind of reminiscent of a crisp apple with even like a little hint of lime to it a little bit. But then it finished off with a little bit more cidery of an aftertaste. So, you know, it's interesting. I think hearing or listening back to, you know, Chris's remarks about this, and we'll be interested to hear some of Ryan's thoughts as well. I didn't get quite as much blueberry there, although maybe that's a little bit what that tartness is. But definitely getting a very cidery aftertaste here. You know, I would say that it has the right amount of sweetness, and it's very balanced. It's not overly sweet. You know, as I was drinking this, it actually reminded me of Zombie Killer. For those of you that have ever had that bee nectar mead, that's a hard cider that's brewed with honey and cherry. So, you know, substitute the cherry for blueberries. And to me, I was just getting something that was very similar to that mead. I really appreciated this mead. You know, I have not tried something like this where they're like a sizer with other fruit added. And that really lent a very fascinating level of complexity to this, with kind of that apple flavor playing with the blueberry. The body, I said, was medium light, and similar to the aroma, with the flavor, the honey character was there. It was kind of mild and took a little bit of a backseat to the fruit character. Again, not a bad thing at all. Overall impression, a very well-balanced mead. There were absolutely no off flavors. There was no alcohol heatness or anything like that. I think that's the sign of a very clean fermentation. I think you took good care of just all of the critical factors, temperature control, nutrients. And to me, I wrote down, you know, this is to me something that would be a little bit of a little bit lighter, medium lighter bodied summertime sipper. Fruity, tart, with a touch of sweetness, and I really liked that just slight little bit of carbonation in there, just made for a very pleasant drinking experience. So definitely enjoyed this. I think it's a little bit different of a review than maybe you got from Chris, and I'll be interested to hear what Ryan thinks as well. But again, all in all, this was just fantastic.
Cool, thanks. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I'll take a different one because, you know, our listeners don't need to hear me say the same thing over and over again. But if I'm just speaking from higher level impressions and some things like that, as JD said, I called this one the blueberry pie mead because I got.
Oh, we're just hang on, Ryan. I'm coming to get you. We just lost Ryan. Let me try to get him back.
Man overboard.
Man overboard. throwing out the life preserver. Are you there, Ryan? Did we get you?
Yeah.
Did we save you?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Just to jump right back into it. As JD was mentioning, I call this one the blueberry pie mead because it to me was like drinking, you know, the flavor of drinking a blueberry pie filling, and not, you know, not as thick or things like that. I mean, obviously at a mead consistency, but just very, very blueberry pie filling. I said there was even this hint of almost graham cracker-ish aroma or little aftertaste. I guess that was right along with the ride there. I described it as, you know, for me, I thought it was a sipper. I said it was definitely a sipper, and it would need something bold to stand up to it, you know, like a strong cheese, like a very pungent cheese, I thought would stand up very nicely to this one.
Yes.
So overall, I thought it was pleasant. This to me would be one of those meads that I'd probably take in a 6 ounce bottle or 187 milliliter bottle, you know, just because it was also very sweet to me, and I'm not a big sweet fan or a big sweet drinker. I know Chris is going to try to turn my mind around with his project, which, though the gravity tells you it's sweet, doesn't come off that way. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Overall, I thought it was well done. Well done is it again to me is probably a short glass sipper, a one and done type thing, you know, for the night. Not necessarily one that I'd take a six pack up to the beach.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Very good. Thanks, guys. It's kind of fun going through each other's meads and, offering up our thoughts. I really appreciate it. Like I said last show, it really means quite a bit to me because I feel I'm getting a much more honest opinion on my projects coming from you guys than I would, say, my relatives, who half of them are perpetually drunk most of the time. So and it wouldn't matter. And I give all my bad shit to my neighbors just so they'd stay away, so they don't come asking for more. So, I'm kind of excited about this whole thing because I got a couple other things that I'm working on that, a couple of may be ready to stick in a keg and bottle up here in a little while. So I am kind of eager to put another box together and send out, and I'm going to include a bottle of the cider because I think you guys are going to love this. This is good stuff. Chris got his, I don't know what show it might have been over the space of a couple of shows. You guys remember him whining about not getting his score sheet and carrying on about his forgotten mead and all that. You guys recall that?
Oh, he's always whining about something.
he was convinced that one of the stewards opened the bottle, got a whiff of it, and drank the whole thing, and then, you know, just didn't give it to the judges.
Yeah. So Chris apparently got his score sheet back from the Mazer Cup, and he entered his heart murmur. Now, I've known Chris for a lot longer than I've known you guys. Chris and I have been together for, several years now, probably going on about 3 years now. Chris has been working on this heart murmur long before I even started, before I even knew it. And I don't know how many batch upon batch that he's made of this heart murmur. But he sent a bottle of this off to the Mazer Cup. Now, this heart murmur is supposed to be a takeoff of, I believe, Ken Schramm's Heart of Darkness, I think it's called.
Correct.
It's cherry, raspberry, black currant. And he also sent his cherry. Now, it just goes back to, probably somewhere around show 12. Here, we're 44 shows into it. This will be 44, show 44 tonight. So I'm thinking probably somewhere around 12 or 13. This is let's just call it pre-Ryan. He was working on a cherry project, as you recall. Well, he sent a bottle of that off as well. And so he got the scores back. And now Jeff, you're probably going to have to help us out here because I don't get what the numbers mean. They don't mean anything to me. But the Heart Murmur was scored at 42 and 45 by two judges. And the Cherry was scored at 43 and 44. Sergio Mutella was one of the judges on the Cherry project. But let's stay with the Heart Murmur at 42 and 45. What do those numbers mean?
So that's the numbers are the aggregate score of all of the different categories put together. And I'm pulling this up now so that I can kind of give you guys a little bit better read on what those numbers mean here. But there are obviously different categories, kind of exactly like we've been reviewing lately. There's some for appearance, some for aroma, clarity. There's an overall impression as well. My phone is, of course, not cooperating with me in this regard. But these categories here, yes. So the bouquet and aroma is the first category, and it has a 10 point potential score. Appearance has up to 6 points. Flavor is, of course, the biggest one. It is a 24 point category, and then overall impression is another 10 points that can sway things one way or the other. So the way this works out is, to my mind, a good bordering on great mead goes somewhere in the 30s, mid-30s maybe, to lower 30s if it's just good. To get up to 45 is something really noteworthy. That you're talking about something that is, you're losing 5 points in five points in four categories. My mistake. Which is, you're hitting all the stops. This is an excellent mead. It fits the category. It fits the style, if you will. It's appealing to drink. It's appealing to look at. It is a good mead. Like I told Chris earlier, I have meddled in competitions easily on a 45. The fact of the matter is that he entered probably the most popular category in one of the biggest mead competitions in the world, and as a fish in a pond, that's a big pond, and there are a lot of big fish in it. So to do as well as he did is still saying a lot.
Yeah. Some of the comments that they came out of the Heart Murmur is, quote, "This is absolutely luscious. Doesn't seem as sweet as it is. Perfect balance. Phenomenal. Deep fruit hits the palate in waves. Tannin sweeps through the palate, chasing the sweetness and acidity away, finishing bone dry." Chris loved that comment because the final gravity is 1.058. And, Chris, he likes to start his out at like 1.248. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, for context, where he finished is above where I start most of my session meets.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris likes to push the envelope on yeast for sure. His stuff, his average start is in the sixes, and he's been known to even try to go higher than that. But I know he starts a lot of his stuff out in the six range, so like 1.16 something, and. So he'll even tell you. I mean, he's pushing the envelope on the yeast and has really, really has to baby some of his stuff. High gravity starts off pretty good, to ensure, a good start on the fermentation. But, congratulations to Chris. Outstanding job. I wish he was here to hear that. And I know he never has time to listen to the show, but I'm sure that we'll speak to him. We'll all talk to him when he gets back. But I just thought it was kind of funny, Chris going on and on and on. And for a while there, I thought he was serious. I thought, well, maybe they did misplace his mead, or they just found it so awful that nobody was going to say nothing about it or something. But I'm glad he finally got the paperwork back. Looks like he did very well. Of course, they were both pushed to the second round, obviously. Very happy, very pleased about it. So he says he was worried about the cherry because his fermentation, one of those little apartment-sized refrigerators that he used as a fermentation fridge. And it quit on him, and he didn't know it until he dug in there to check on it and discovered that it wasn't working. And so he had a kind of an alcohol thing going on there that he was a little worried about. Apparently, I guess that was picked up by the judges too, but obviously it didn't do all that bad since it scored right up there with the with that heart murmur project of his too. So again, congratulations, Chris, on a good job on both of those meads. Hearing that about Chris, guys. I'm kind of getting, I printed off a whole bunch of stuff the other day from a couple of competitions here, and I'm seriously considering, sending some stuff off. Now that I've heard from you guys on some of my projects, I thought maybe now's the time. I think I know what I'm doing, maybe now's the time,
Yeah. Well, and our previous guest, Michael Fairbrother's, Moonlight Meadery is doing Mead for Your Die at the end of the month. As long as you can get entries in there by the 15th, I think they've still got spots. So I have four, and I may be sending a fifth in for that one. And feel free to compete against me. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I may do that. Send some stuff off. I'll have to get them off this week because we're going to be out of town. I think we're leaving the 8th. I don't know. I'll have to check with the boss when she gets home. But that might be something I would look into as well.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
Are there any requirements for that in terms of like a minimum number of bottles you need to submit, or if you just had one 12-ouncer, would that be sufficient?
You do need. They request three 12-ounce bottles for that.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think if you send only two, the way that works is there's a chance that you won't, even if you get pushed to best of show, they won't be able to judge you because they won't have enough. I believe that's how they phrase that, or they're worried they wouldn't have enough because they always ask for extra just in case a bottle gets broken in transit.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think I remember hearing that about the Mazer Cup and wasn't sure about this one as well.
Yeah. You know, something else is interesting, and I heard about the Mazer Cup that their scoring philosophy. And, we talk about competitions here, where we have talked about competitions here lately, and we've talked about scores and some things like that. And we throw around numbers, 45, 42, 41, it's important to know that, these meads aren't,
they're not poured into a universal scoring gauge that will spit out the exact number, you know, every single time and every competition. Obviously there's a human element to it, and it's and there are so many factors that go into that human element. How experienced is the judge? As much as you try to keep preference out of it, preference will creep in a little bit. What kind of a day is the judge having, you know, in terms of, is it early in the day? Is it late in the day? The theory there is in any competition in the world, regardless of what it is, whether it's figure skating or mead making, judges tend to be stingier with points earlier in the day, and then more liberal with points late in the day. So where, you know, what time it, or what, where in the day was your mead judged? Where were you in the flight? What else have they had that day that's going to potentially, you know, impact their palate? You know, I could go on and on and on, but I'll kind of leave it there. Where I was going with scoring philosophy to start with is that, in many competitions, they start from a zero scoring model, and it's essentially you add up the points. So you start at a zero and you go to the first category. Okay, how did this do? You know, you add up, and when you start at a zero model, scores are typically lower. The Mazer Cup, as I understand it, starts at a top down. So basically everybody starts the perfect score. You know, the minute your mead is poured and your mead's in front of a judge, you've got a 50. And then as they find the fault, they knock that down. So they're taking points away for the faults they find. And it's nuanced. I mean, some people might have to go back and listen to this part of the show twice to get what I'm saying, but it's a nuance. You know, do you start with zero and you count up, or do you start with 50 and count and take points away? When you start with 50 and take points away, that also tends to produce some higher scores. In no way am I saying what, you know, Chris did is not amazing and absolutely, you know, should be proud of it. I'm just saying there are some different models in that, you know, as we've talked about, you can take the same bottle from the same batch and send it to different competitions, and you can see a very wide spread of scores, you know, based on all of these different factors that will, that are frankly inevitable, and unavoidable.
So, yeah, a couple of things to throw out there. I know I can't speak for every judge at mead competitions, but the couple of competitions that I've judged, I have taken the approach of the perfect score and then detracting from that as I find faults, as opposed to starting at zero. I can confirm that's the way I kind of approach this. That said, I know if you look at his score sheets, and I probably should have made this clear to Chris too, You get one score sheet for each round, and that has the listed judge's name on it. The way that works, though, is that judge is kind of like the captain for the table. And part of the way to mitigate that human element of just one judge having a bad day or having wrecked their palate with spicy food before the round is usually there's two, if not three or four judges at a table. And the aggregate score that they come up with has to be agreed upon within, I believe it's a 2-point margin. So there can be a lot of back and forth and debate before a final score for that round is kind of agreed on. I have rarely had a beer that me and the other judge or judges at the table just agreed wholeheartedly was, you know, this is a 36, this is 38. Perfect, right there. 38 is the bright number. Usually there's a little bit of, well, you have a point, The hops wasn't quite there as much as I wanted it to be, but it wasn't bad. So maybe I'll call it. I'll give them a couple extra points here. That kind of finagling went on a lot from my side. So there is a little bit of mitigation built in to deal with just the human element. That said, I'm sure there is still plenty of room for change because, you know, I know I have had some beads, judged really highly at one competition and just judged, yeah, it's okay. It's pretty, it's just okay at other competitions. So there is always a room for variance.
It really comes down, I think, well, I should say a big part of what I think it comes down to is what that judge is expecting to see and what they expect to see for that style. And again, that goes to the fact of, are you an experienced judge? Or are you a novice judge? Are you a master judge? And I know that Mead's only got, you know, Mead judge, but, you know, a lot of these guys on the score sheets, they'll check, you know, I'm a, you know, a master judge and I have a Mead certification, you know, or things like that. And, it's a couple times what I've noticed is they, you know, and I'm guessing, cause I haven't been at the scoring table and obviously the Meads that, you know, heard them, you know, debate some of the things that I've entered, but it sounds to me, it sounds like sometimes they just chop it in half. So let's say you've got a 5 or a 6 point spread, you know, you can see the score sheet where the guy started out and I'll, you know, make up the number. One guy had a 40 and, you know, one guy had a 42 and one guy had a 36. And that's like a 6 point spread. And they just kind of cross that out and they split the difference. So I think, you know, just, you know, if any of you have ever been on a jury, you know, you can have a really strong foreman or you can have a really passive foreman. And, you know, if the, and if kind of at the judging table, you know, you probably have a really, you can have a really strong personality who tries to debate. No, no, I really think this is, you know, closer to the 40. Or you can have, you know, somebody who's more passive who just says, oh, well, we can just split the difference. You know, you made some points, so let's split the difference. The other side I've seen is, again, with that stinginess, I've seen a lot of the novice judges tend to overcompensate and score harder. Then, and this is a generalization made off of only a handful of score sheets. But whenever I see that novice box checked, those tend to be the lowest scores I see, as they are, you know, compensating or whatever it might be as they gain experience and really in their mind have what they think, you know, technical perfection is, and will very, you know, bluntly, you know, put some of those comments in even when they're, you know, dead wrong about what they've perceived.
Where do we go with that?
I do agree that there is room for the stronger personality to kind of bully their favor a little bit more. On the other hand, I've not met many judges that don't have the willingness to have a strong opinion about whatever they're judging. It kind of comes with the territory that if you're going to go out for this, you're going to stake your line in the sand and go, yeah, no, that is my impression. And, well, you know, I'm willing to concede a little bit, but, no, you're not going to change my mind.
Interesting. I was just reading through Chris's email. He says, quote, I wanted to make this refers to his heart murmur. He says, quote, I wanted to make a close copy of Ken Tran's Heart of Darkness, which everyone could make using readily available ingredients without the need to grow your own orchard. I bought some frozen fruit from Walmart along with some juice and concentrate, used some honey that JD sent me, put it in a plastic bucket from Lowe's, and ended up with a world-class example of a mixed fruit melomel. Mission accomplished, unquote. That rounds it up pretty good right there, Chris. remember how he talks about his $12 bucket. So, but anyway, so, well, interesting stuff, guys, on competing. Let's turn our thoughts more towards actually making mead here for a little bit. I know we've all got projects lined up, and I kind of wanted to spend a few minutes going down the list, if you've got any. And, you know, things that you're thinking about doing, you know, I'd like to be able to elicit some ideas from each other. I know I've got some, now, you know, as you know, I'm more into the braggot thing. I'm not doing melomels. I'm not doing, you know, the other categories. My bracket, my category is the braggot, and I just dig those. And I know I'm not quite there yet because, even the orange blossom thing, the orange beer, still not satisfied with it because, you know, and I don't know, maybe Aaron and Ryan, did you guys get any whiff at all? Did you get any kind of honey character aroma out of that at all?
Out of the orange, which one? You know, I did not get much. I mean, if I was getting, maybe that's where that Tootsie Pop might have been coming from as a combination of some of that honey and caramel and orange. But I could give that to 10 people and probably have 10 people go, I didn't know there was honey in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And for me, I think I described a little bit of a salty flavor that I sometimes will pick up from a fermented honey. And there's definitely a very strong orange character, but I wonder how much of that is actually coming from, you know, the zest and the orange versus the orange blossom honey. I would say it's not a very strong or pronounced honey character.
Yeah. Okay. At any rate, so Ryan, what kind of projects have you got on your list? And what are you thinking about? What do you need help with as far as ideas or, you know, if you need any ideas? Actually, you're probably the one that everybody else, at least I've gone to quite a few times for some ideas too.
Well, but, I can tell you guys I've got something going. I got a lot of my fermenters are full right now as I've got stuff, but I've got a sizer going right now in primary, and the sizer is right now it's just apple juice and wildflower honey. And I am going to do I'm going to break that off and do a 1 gallon experiment with some of those barrel chips that JD and I picked up. Mm-hmm. And then the lion's share of it, I'm going to do my hibiscus sizer, which I make by making a hibiscus tea and then adding it in secondary. And then I do that one with, I call it a very high carbonation. And after it sits for a while, it's really good on a hot summer day. It's dry and it's tart, and it was one of my early batches when I first made it, and I got a lot of accolades for it, a lot of compliments. So I'm gonna do another batch of that. My daughter has a birthday party coming up at the end of April, and I am going to make beer for the adults at the party because she's still little enough where the birthday parties are more for the adults than the kids, although I think she's crossing that threshold and it's probably more for her, but we're going to have some good beer anyway. And so this one is going to be a braggot based on a Kolsch. So it's going to be 2/3 malt and 1/3 honey.
I'm still calling it a braggot. And then, you know, I've got it, do an extract brew with it. I mean, I can run through this very quickly with you guys. It's going to do, I do a 15 minute, you guys, I do 15 minute boils on a lot of my beers. 3 pounds, actually, it's, I think, 3.15 pounds of Pilsen liquid malt syrup. And 1 pound of wheat dry malt extract. And then I'll do 2 pounds of wildflower honey after it's a little past flame out, when it's I don't want to get the honey that hot. I don't want to boil that honey or get it close to boiling. So I'll add the 2 pounds of wildflower honey a little bit later. 1 ounce of Magnum hops at 15 minutes to get some little bit of bitterness in there. And then 1 ounce of Hirschbrucker German hops at flame out. And then I've got some steeping grains I'm going to do. This is pretty muddled here, but it's 2 ounces of honey, Canadian honey malt, 2 ounces of Caramel 10, 2 ounces of Bondlander Munich, 2 ounces of Belgian Aromatic, and 8 ounces of Kolsch malt, which is typically used as a base malt. So I'll steep those, bring some color and some aroma, a little bit of flavor, and then I'll ferment it with the at about 62 degrees with the Y-East 2564 Kolsch. And then I'll bottle condition that one. And that I think is going to make a really nice Kolsch braggot, which it should be light. It should have a little bit of hoppiness to it, a little bit of breadiness, some good aroma. It should remind you of a good German Kolsch, with that braggot twist on it. So I'm excited to give that one a try. I've also got just a straight beer that I'm making on the list here, and then I probably need to get another one of my lemon melomels going. So that I've got that at least, as we get into the late summer here and ready to go there. I've got so many things on my list. I mean, I'm probably looking into next year until I get through my entire list here. But those are at least the next few that are in the immediate future coming down the pike here.
Buy some more fermenters.
Yeah.
Buy a couple of more buckets.
Yeah, the problem. Some of these are better aged, and some of them are better fresh. And I can't have too much of a backlog of the fresh stuff, or we're gonna start to hit a point of diminishing return here.
Yeah, no, my wife keeps hinting at the fact that I've got boxes of, like beers and wines kind of spread all over the place here, and I really need to get it organized so it doesn't look like there's so much. Aaron, what have you got on your list, and if anything that you need some ideas or anything for?
So my list, I think first off, I'm hopefully getting to a point here where I'll be able to get back into some mead making here at some point in the not too distant future. I think first and foremost on my list, after hearing the comments that Chris got on his heart murmur, to me, that is the style of mead that is just really sticking out in my mind right now. I think I've been fortunate to be a part of this show and sample so many different kinds of mead, both that, you know, you guys have all made, some really tremendous stuff from the professionals. And I just have to say, there's been so many great ones, but that, Midnight Jack from Melavino just really, really sticks out to me. And I think one of the comments that Chris got on his heart murmur, you know, it was described as being luscious. And when I read that, it brought me back to drinking that Midnight Jack from Sergio. So that, you know, that's the style that I really want to start to play around with a little bit more, are some, you know, some insanely high starting gravity melomels with real tart fruit that gets added to it. You know, I think that's really my starting point. Now, you know, having said that, I think there may be some experiments that kind of jut out from that base a little bit. You know, we had talked, I think, in a previous episode about starting with that type of a melomel, maybe like a blackcurrant melomel, and adding different types of, you know, port or other types of liqueurs to see what type of flavors you can get. So, you know, what scale I do that on, you know, maybe it's taking a 5-gallon batch of the base mead and even just mixing it a small glass at a time with different types of additives like that. I think that may be another direction that I take that. But, you know, I think in addition to that, definitely, I think that the hopped mead experiment produced some results that I have definitely enjoyed. And I would definitely want to scale those up. I think that's something that's definitely on my list as well. You know, whether or not I'd stick with the Chinook, which I think the majority of the listeners seem to approve of that. So, you know, whether or not I stick with that or switch over to another hop.
Dude, let me tell you something. You don't bother with the fruit crap. Don't, you know, you could make that Chinook thing, put it in 6-packs and take it to the liquor store and put it on the shelf. I'm telling you.
You know, if you want to branch out, Aaron, you can start with a blend that is predominantly Chinook and add some extra interest, like a third or a quarter to the hop mixture. I mean, go with what you know works and then try to branch out from there before you just throw caution to the wind entirely, I think.
You got something going with that Chinook, dude. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think maybe what I'm taking away from this is scale up the Chinook to a 3-gallon or a 5-gallon batch, but then with some of the 1-gallon carboys I have, you know, Jeff, maybe that's where some of that experimentation comes into play, where I start blending different types of hops to see, you know, different types of hops, different ratios of the different hops, and see what kind of results you can get there. You know, an interesting concept that's just in my mind right now is maybe 2 hops with, you know, 3 different ratios, maybe one batch where it's a 50-50 blend, maybe one where it's 75-25 in favor of one hop, and then another where it's 25-75 of, you know, the other one. That might be an interesting experiment.
You could take that Chinook and even play around with fruits, light fruits, okay, very lightly fruited, okay, like drop a couple of pounds of blueberries or blackberries or raspberries, oh my God, just a very slight fruity. I mean, that Chinook, dude, you could go miles and miles with just that as a base, and go off into different directions. And, you know, ramp that thing up to a 5-gallon batch, split it off into 5 ones. And I mean, I'd do blueberries in one. I'd do blackberries in another. I'd do raspberries in one, do something floral. you know, maybe in another, because you're on to something with that Chinook. Go ahead.
Yeah, I really
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in. That reminded me the blending experiment you were talking about of something I did recently, because I came into possession of a few different hops and I wanted to kind of figure out a blend that, you know, I had aspects of one that I liked, aspects of another that I liked. So I set up kind of just a more or less a really small scale experiment doing different blends with a little titration pipette so I could control milliliter by milliliter, you know, what the blending amount was and get a really fine grain, level of control with it. It turned out though that my fine grain control wasn't necessarily all that important, because really the ratio that I settled on, was, a multiple of 10, like, you know, 40% one, 60% the other. Really simple. Instead of having the portions of a milliliter control that I was looking for. But yeah, you can get into all kinds of different experiments to blend your hops and kind of get the best of both worlds going there.
Little mixture experiment type of thing. That sounds like an interesting one, Jeff. And, you know, JD, as you were describing some of those different fruit and hop variety type meads, earlier in the show, I was talking about bee nectar. I swear it was a bee nectar that I'm thinking of that was another cherry mead, but it was a cherry hopped mead. And, you know, I remember seeing it at the store thinking, you know, kind of raising an eyebrow a little bit, like, what is this cherry, you know, fruit and hops? How well is this going to play together? But it was really interesting and it was really good. So, you know, you may be onto something there too, to throw in a little bit of fruit there and see what types of different flavors you can come up with.
You know,
yeah, that one's called Dwarf Invasion. I've had that one as well. It's pretty good.
Yeah, Dwarf Invasion. I love the names of their stuff.
There's Zombie Killer. Oh yeah. there's a water out there that I drink sometimes in the summertime. It's like zero. It's like, I don't know how they get the flavors in there, but it's like zero calories, zero everything. And in fact, it might even be called zero, but it's flavored water. And it comes in all, you know, cherry, raspberry, you know, all the different flavors. But it's not like drinking a soda. Because it's not real sweet. In fact, it's really not hardly sweet at all. I like them because they're very refreshing. I mean, there's like zero calories, there's zero fat, zero everything. And that's what I'm thinking. It's got this light fruit, you know, berry, you know, whether you're drinking, even the lemon one or the cherry one or the blackberry one or whatever. But that's what I'm thinking. That's what prompted me on this thing with this Chinook thing, you know, just remembering, those waters. But, Jeff, what kind of, you know, and we need to get back to our discussion about the beehive too. Probably do that after I come back from Utah. But what have you got planned, what's on your list?
Yeah, so this weekend I'm probably putting together my IPA braggot. I've talked about it before. The last summer that I had a near sweep of the mead competition at Missouri Mashers Hot Summer Brew-Off, and they gave me between the stuff that I got for judging and the stuff that I got for winning medals in that competition, they gave me kind of a grab bag of different yeasts and hops, some Star Sand, some PBW, just all kinds of good stuff. And one of the things they gave me was a 4-ounce pack of Apollo hops, which are very bitter, very strong IPA hops, essentially. And I figured, you know, those are sitting in my fridge. They've been sitting there for almost a year now. I really have to do something with them. So I'm going to take half of those, and along with some nice Centennial hops that I got that are more or less fresh leaf hops, and make a basic IPA bracket out of that. Probably end up around, I figured 8.5%. So that'll be nice. And then, I'm also thinking about putting together a dry Basswood traditional, do a little bit of an oak experiment on at some point or another. But I'll ferment that out first, of course, and then do the oaking at the end. I actually recently also removed a mead from my to-do list. I came into possession of about 5 pounds of Concord grapes.
It wasn't watermelon, was it?
No, I'm just not that ambitious enough to do a watermelon in the first place. No, I had 5 pounds of Concord grapes that I kept thinking, you know what? I'm going to try.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, my wife and I happened on a really fantastic sale of Missouri local wines at one of our local liquor stores. We picked up a bottle of Concord wine for $6. And it was drinkable, not terribly enjoyable to me. Not exactly the kind of thing I want. It tastes like sugary grape Kool-Aid.
Is it kind of like along the lines of the Muscadine wines that are so popular out in the Carolinas and out in the South?
You know, I'm not very familiar with the Muscadines, but
sweet. Just think sweet.
It's sweet, and it still had that very lingering. If you're familiar with Concord grape juice, it has that flavor. A little bit of a kind of a bite from the alcohol, but not very much. And really, it turned me off the idea. So I think I'm going to be making some grape jelly with that instead.
There you go.
I was going to say, Jeff, the Concord grape, did it remind you of like a Smucker's grape jelly type of a flavor?
A little bit, yeah. No, the flavor I got was really more grape Kool-Aid than grape jelly, but it definitely is a Concord-y flavor, and that's totally Smucker.
Yeah.
Gotcha. No, the reason I ask, there is a vineyard and winery up in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, Riverbend Vineyard, that my wife and I just absolutely love this place. And they've got a really wide array of different wines, but they do one that is a Concord grape wine. And, you know, for those of you that aren't as big on the real sweet dessert type wines, I would probably push you more towards one of their drier selections, but I really like it, and it kind of reminds me of that, like a Smucker's grape jelly type of a deal.
Yeah, I feel like grape jelly was a little bit more deep and pronounced flavor. This was a little bit more, it's wine, but it's also Concord grapes. It has a kind of it just wasn't as appealing as it could have been. I might have liked it better if it was more along the lines of a higher gravity, a little bit more dense and higher body. It seems like something I want to try less and less, though, the more I remember it.
Gotcha.
What kind of honey are you considering for that IPA bracket?
That I'm also going to use some of this basswood I've got with. The basswood I picked up, I got a good deal on it last summer because it's not everybody's favorite honey. I've tried it in a few different things, and there are some bitter notes to it that are unappealing, but I really like it in brackets. I used some of this in my Saison bracket from last summer, and that turned out amazing. I know, having tried some of Aaron's basswood honey in it. I like the way basswood goes in braggots and hoppy stuff. So I think it goes well there.
What's the tell me more about the basswood for a minute. What kind of characteristics do you get out of the basswood?
So the basswood is it's honey from linden tree blossoms, and the character of it is kind of, the sweetness is less pronounced to me. It, there is an acidy sharpness and a little bit of a bitter finish on the back end of the palate. It is not as, what do I want to say? For the same amount of density of honey in water, it doesn't have the same level of sweetness perception to me, and I think it is because basswood honey tends to be more acidic and have some slightly better flavor components that balance out that honey and make it seem perceptively less. My 2 cents on it.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is because I've got some kits here that that I picked up, and I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with them. They just sounded interesting. My wife loves the real hoppy stuff. I mean, her favorite beer of all time is the Arrogant Bastard Ale. And if you've ever had one of those, you'll know what I mean. So I got this kit called the Dead Ringer IPA. And obviously, everything I do, I'm going to turn it into a braggart. So when you mentioned you're looking at an IPA braggart with basswood, I thought, I wonder what that basswood's like. I may want to try that as well.
Yeah. I really do like it in braggarts. I think it's a fantastic honey for that. I'm not sure it would be my go-to for everything, but I've liked it for that particular purpose. I also used it in my apple pie mead that you guys are probably going to get a bottle of that too. And there is a little bit higher acid content than there probably should be between the malic of the apples and the basswood. But it comes out nice to me.
Yeah. Cool. I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5 projects here that are staring me in the face. I'm going to talk about 4 of them. One is the orange. Now I just bottled the cream orange project. Now this one is actually more like, I'll tell you what it tastes like. It tastes like a cream vanilla orange soda, okay, with some hops in it. That's the best way I could describe it. Along the same lines as the other orange project, only this one's a little bit different. This one was done with a different kit, a La Petite Orange kit from Northern Brewer. And it sat on tangerine. It was done with 1.5 ounces of orange peel in the boil from Naval Oranges. And then it sat on tangerine, mostly tangerine, 1 ounce of mostly tangerine, and I'd say probably 3/4 of an ounce of tangerine, and the rest was from a Naval Orange, and 3 vanilla beans. Some lactose went into it for some extra sweetness to give it that creamy feel to it. I'm not quite satisfied with it because I think it's too much orange. It's too orangish. It tastes good. But I think I know the cure there is just to cut back on the amount of oranges. Now, I don't know whether to cut back in a boil or cut back in the secondary. And I would appreciate some input on that because I really have no clue as to how much the 1 ounce of or 1.5 ounces of orange peel really does in the boil versus the 1 ounce, in the secondary. It's hard to decipher which one of those really imparts more orange flavor. What do you guys think?
my impression here is that the one you should cut it back on is the one in the boil, and my logical reasoning behind that comes from the similarity to hops and the oil in hops, because I know it's actually the boil and the heat of the boil that isomerizes the hops oils and turns them into that bitter component that creates the bitterness. Otherwise, you get a lot more flavor and aroma for it instead. So I would think that the boil side is the one you want to cut back on based on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I agree with Jeff. And just to add on to what he's saying also is that if you cut back on the one in the boil, you know, you're losing a lot of the flavor and a lot of the aroma in the boil of that peel, where when you add it in secondary, you're going to keep more of that orange essence, which I think is also what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, right now it's just, I mean, as much as it tastes really good, I just feel that it has a little too much orange in it. And I really wasn't looking for a soda-like, but something that would, you know, feel good in the mouth, something that's got a little bit of a bite to it, something that's got a little bit of that sweet orange flavor to it. And I think I got it, but I think it's just a little too much orange. So I'll give that a try. Of course, we talked about the bourbon barrel thing. I've got another bourbon barrel kit that I'm going to do. And I know, Ryan, you really like that bourbon barrel too. The other boys haven't had that one yet. Aaron liked the bourbon barrel one, as I recall.
Totally.
Yeah. And so that was 6 pounds of honey. And I think I told you guys wrong. The bourbon barrel one was actually something like 3 pounds, I believe. I have to get the book and look. So I'm kind of stuck between the two. Let's see, 6 pounds. Okay, that's not the one. Let's see, bourbon barrel two. Bear with me as I look in my book. Bourbon Braggot. Okay, this one has 2 pounds. Okay, the bourbon barrel two, Ryan, that only had 2 pounds of wildflower honey in it.
Right.
So big difference between one and two. So I'm thinking somewhere around 3 pounds to 4 pounds, maybe. You think I can get away with that and stay with the same everything? I may add a few more, you know, maybe a couple of vanilla beans to it.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely, I think that. You know, both your bourbon barrels one and two were excellent. You know, I preferred the one with a little bit less honey, but I think that there was room to go up from there. So I think, yeah, you're going 3 or 4 pounds. And then, yeah, vanilla bean just to enhance that. I think you'd be onto something real special there.
Okay.
Agreed. Yeah, the idea of a vanilla bean in there is really fascinating to me. And part of me is, you know, that I think it was the BB1 that I had. Part of me is like, don't change anything, just make more of that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I think experimenting a little and throwing in the vanilla bean and altering the amount of honey, you might find something even better.
Aaron, I really love that bourbon barrel one, too. I mean, I love that. I really dig it. And
heck yeah.
I wanted, you know, and it's not to say I won't do it again in the future, but for this one, I wanted something that would want you to for a second glass. And that bourbon barrel one just doesn't do it. One's enough. You know, when I finish the first glass, I want to go back to the tap and pour me a second glass. And I think if I cut down on this honey, get the ABV down, get the, you know, just not so thick, you know, thin it down a little bit, I think it would be pretty good. So
totally agree. Yep. And I will say that, I mean, the words that stick out in my mind of that BB1 is just a big boozy beer. And yeah. I could maybe do a couple of them in one sitting, but that's pushing it. So, you know, scaling down the honey and finding one a recipe that's a little bit more on the drinkable side that once you invites you to come back for that second glass, totally yeah. understand taking it in that direction.
Yeah. I've also got this Caribou Slobber. Now, if you go on a Northern Brewer, it's like the most, it's got like the most reviews of any beer they make, that they offer. And, so I thought there must be something to this stuff. So I ordered a box, and, this is a brown ale. Very popular, with the kits from Northern Brewer. And I thought, I want to do something with that. I want to do something with nuts. And I just don't know. I'm thinking macadamia nut. I love macadamia nuts. I don't know. Where should I go with this, this brown, ale?
You know, JD, I would start with peanuts. And the reason I peanuts. Say that, and the part of the reason I say peanuts is I've done some reading. And once you do the fermentation, it becomes very difficult to tell the nuanced nuts apart. So was it a peanut? Okay. Was it an almond? Was it a pistachio? Was it a, you right. know, a cashew? And why I say that is, you know, you get a peanut for, you know, what, $1 a pound, or your macadamia is for $15 a pound. And I don't know if you're going to get that much of a difference between the two.
Yeah.
So,
you don't think, I mean, you know, I tried one of those peanut butter stout things. I couldn't stand it. I mean, that was just awful. You don't think I'm going to wind up with something like that, do you? With peanuts?
You know, I had a peanut stout as well. It was good for a sip. I was like, oh, well, now I've tasted it. I don't need the rest of the glass.
Yeah.
I don't, you're not trying to create this peanut butter flavor.
Right.
You're just trying to use the peanuts or the nuts. I think that's really interesting.
And I'll say with the wildflower honey, the dark honey. In fact, I've been caramelized. I caramelized the last of my honey. I've got to get some more. But I've got 2 half-gallon mason jars filled with caramelized honey. And I did it the crock pot method, which worked out very nicely, I must say. So I'm planning on using that as the honey, a caramelized honey, maybe 3-4 pounds. I want to get, you know, when I'm doing my braggots, I read somewhere that, you know, you got to get up over 30% of the fermentables for the honey to really have some sort of an impact. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm trying to at least keep the honey portion at least 30% of the fermentables in my braggots, hoping that that's going to do something in the end, you know, besides just, you know, ramp up the ABV. But Jeff, I've got this Dead Ringer IPA that I mentioned. And I was interested in what you were doing with yours. Basswood honey. I've got my wildflower, but as far as adjuncts, are you considering anything other than just what comes with the kit, or, you know, adding something to it? How could you spruce it up a little bit.
So this is actually my own recipe. It's not a kit.
Okay.
I'm developing it some. I've picked apart a few different recipes that I like the components of. So the malt, for the most part, in my my recipe is going to be Maris Otter LME that has it has a very distinct English ale kind of quality to it. Maris Otter is one of those malts that it's fallen out of favor, lately because while it has a nice complex flavor to it, the sugar extraction is not what modern malts could be. So you wind up using more of it and going through a more more difficult process to get the sugar extracted from it, as opposed to just basically 2-row or 6-row malt. Since I'm using an LME, I don't care. I just want the complexity. To that, I have, I'm adding some Crystal 10-0, about a pound of that, and a half a pound of what my local brew shop calls an aromatic Munich, which is, it's a Munich in the 30L range. And that should give it a little bit of a kind of a toasty, bready character. So I'm trying to put some interesting malts in behind what will be a strong to moderate bitter hop presence.
Yeah. So I should probably just leave mine as a straight up, you know, just honey and. I mean, I don't know what I, you know. I'm not, like I said, I'm not an IPA drinker. It's a little too hoppy for me, so I'm not even sure that anything you'd even put in it would even benefit. I mean, because the hoppy flavor is going to override, you know, at least that's my thought. I don't know.
Yes and no.
Anyway,
I've had some really interesting mix in the glass style brackets where a friend of mine made an IPA and I had just some semi-sweet traditional from really early in my brewing career. Both of them were pretty good all by themselves, but we mixed the two together in glass and that came out really nicely. So the honey character and the bitter character, they just kind of go well together from what I found. And that's to go back to what you were saying though about 30% or so honey, I think in some regards, especially with strong flavors like malt and hops, honey can kind of be like vanilla. It can boost other flavors without being terribly forward itself until you get in fairly high character. So it may take a little bit more honey to really shine through and be apparent.
Well, and I think, you know, and along with that, I think it depends on the kind of honey you're using too, because you know, the wildflower that I get here is much more stronger than the orange blossom honey that I get, just, you know, wildly different. So, I can see that. And, you know, it may turn out that, you know, my wife loves IPAs and I may just do this as a straight up beer for her and put her name on it. you know, I got to keep, you know, and that's what kind of keeps me in my hobby is keeping her happy with my little deal here. So, making her a beer is, kind of falls right in the line there.
Yeah, there's a reason I have 6 gallons of hibiscus chamomile on my counter now.
I hear you. Last but not least, guys, going to wrap the show up here. Ryan, I had sent Ryan a text today. Ryan, as you recall, I asked you about this stout thing that I had going. You were aware of this a while back because I had approached you about the difficulty I was having with it. It's a beer kit. It's a stout that I had was doing as a straight beer. And it started out at like 10:50 and it quit at 10:20. Now I know it's supposed to go a lot further than that. It's supposed to wind up in the way down in the low teens or even lower. And Ryan suggested that, hey, just, you know, add some more yeast to it. So I did. Didn't do anything. And so it's just sitting there. Now it's sitting at 3.9%, so it did ferment a little bit. It's got a, it's got a coffee aroma, a very slight coffee taste. Now it was racked onto coffee beans and cocoa nibs. Ryan, I failed to tell you that in my text after I looked at my notes. But, it just ain't there. It's just got this flat taste. It's not very, it's kind of thin-like. And so I was thinking, you know, why don't I whip up some honey and dump some honey and some more yeast in it? At 3.9%, I mean, I don't think, I think I stand a pretty decent chance of it starting up again. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you do, absolutely. You know, you put a few pounds of honey in there, and you know that whether if the yeast that's in it, you know, is fine, you might not need to add any yeast. But if you want to add more yeast, you probably could as well. If that yeast is all settled out through your rackings and that. But I think you can definitely end up with something salvageable by adding some honey and continuing the ferment.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably give that a shot and, see where it winds up. And I just, I'm getting to the point now where I kind of hate to throw it out. It doesn't taste bad. I mean, it's nothing, there's no off smells, no rank, sock drawer type of, laundry room type smell to it at all. I think it's pretty salvageable. So,
is it still on the nibs and the beans?
Yep, still on the nibs and the beans.
Because, Jeff is probably better to answer this question. But if it picks up a little bit more alcohol, that might draw out the flavors of the nibs and the beans a little more. A little more alcoholic.
Well, yes. I was going to actually rack it off of that into a fresh carboy onto a few more ounces of the same thing, beans and nibs.
Yeah, you may not even need to do it.
Okay. All right.
Like Ryan was saying, yeah, the higher alcohol content will lead to more extraction. It just will. It sounds like you're not getting a lot out of it in the first place, so he may be onto something that you really don't need to add more. If you've got a lot of lees down there already, that it's sitting on, a lot of the yeast detritus and everything, it wouldn't be terrible to get it off of that so it doesn't start autolyzing and giving you off flavors at the same time, though. It's kind of up to you whether you'd want to wash the coffee beans and nibs or put some fresh ones on there and not worry about getting the yeast off of the stuff that's already down there. I would keep that kind of in mind and just play it by ear, see what you see.
Yeah, will do. Very good. Well, guys, we're kind of reached our limit here for tonight. In fact, we probably went a little more overboard tonight than, I guess this is the bonus show, so let's give them a little bit more. So, heck of a show tonight. Good discussion here on the tail end. Certainly appreciate everybody's thoughts in the orange braggot and the blueberry deal, the blueberry pie, as Ryan likes to call it. I don't know what you boys have planned, but the wife and I are taking off for Arizona. We're going to go down and see the Grand Canyon. Be down there for about a little shy of a week, and on up to Heber City, Utah. I spent some time up there with my sister, taking my big camera along and taking pictures. So whatever you guys are going to do for the couple of weeks we're off, have a good time. Stay out of trouble, please. And what do you say we all come back here along about April 25th, and we'll do this thing all over again, you think?
See you then.
All right, guys.